You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
You're listening to Right Side Radio. This is Brian Taylor filling in for Phil Williams. He's on Thanksgiving vacation with his family today, and he'll be there throughout the weekend. I think, Copper, what are y'all going to be doing Thursday and Friday, running some previous shows?
That's right. We'll have some best ofs for you all.
Great. Well, we've had a great opportunity to talk about a number of things today. And, of course, the Arbery trial, the verdict came out just before the show. And so that was three guilty verdicts in that case. We don't expect the conversation to change much after the Rittenhouse case. And we talked earlier in the show about how after the Rittenhouse case and the left seemed to be ready to just abolish the entire justice system. Of course, the belief that that it's systemically racist. But then we saw justice work today in favor of Ahmaud Arbery, and the three white men who were charged with killing him have been convicted of murder, will be going to jail for a very long time. So we now have on the phone an old friend of mine, Paul Sanford. Paul served in the Alabama State Senate with me, and he is now running to replace Mo Brooks in Congress in Alabama's 5th Congressional District. Paul is a small businessman, a restaurateur. Paul, I guess I can call you that. I don't know if barbecue qualifies as being a restaurateur. But great to have you on. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Brian.
Just wanted to talk to you a little bit about what made you decide to jump into this race and get back into politics after leaving the state Senate some years ago?
You know, that seems to be a big question. I kind of had gotten my peaceful little life back, and I was doing some policy analysis and budget analysis for folks in Montgomery and operating as a independent insurance agent as well, traveling the country doing catastrophic events. But it seems like the direction of our country under this current president and the leadership in the House and the Senate has just really gotten things off a track from the America that I grew up with. And then the two major catalysts that really pushed me into this race were when President Biden left our fellow Americans behind in Afghanistan. You know, he took the troops out, but then he left a lot of the support personnel. And it's my understanding they're still Americans that have not been able to get out still in Afghanistan. And then the other motivating factor was the mandate that he passed down through his executive order, and then by encouraging the OSHA people to implement a rule. It's just getting to the point where it seems like our freedom of choice is being attacked at every angle from the federal government. And so those were kind of the two things that really pushed me into this race. And I looked at the field, and there's some good candidates in this race.
It's a really crowded field, isn't it?
A bit different than theirs. Mine comes from a business background. You and I had lots of conversations. You're an attorney. You looked at problems a little bit differently than I did. And it's good to have the ability to play off of one another like we did when we were serving in the Senate. But I think the business background is necessary. And then I think legislative background is necessary when you go to D.C. And I have those qualifications. So that's one of the other reasons that I said, you know, I'm not happy with everybody that's in the race because of the experience, and I feel like I have the experience necessary to be successful there.
Well, so when you get there, when you make it, what are you just laid out some of the problems and the reasons why you're running. Chiefly, I think most people right now are just absolutely concerned about where inflation is going. Nobody, at least in recent memory, has any concept of this level of inflation. It's the highest it's been in 30-something years. What is your view of, I guess, the causes and the solution?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of odd. This is one of these very unique situations where government is the cause and the effect. The cause was the lockdown of the economy a year ago. The cause was once they shut down businesses, put people out of work, then they had to compensate them. so the economy wouldn't just immediately tank. And so they started printing money. And in the past roughly 20 months, we've quadrupled the money supply in America by printing money. And that's under both President Trump and President Biden. And it seems like Congress can't figure out how to stop spending. We just saw the House pass this, you know, $1.75 billion, could be $4 billion or trillion dollar bill. They're not sure how it's all going to pan out. And they just keep spending. And so when government creates a problem and then they try to create a solution, there's always a backlash. And the backlash on this has been inflation. So I think we have to make sure that government starts operating like you and I had to in Alabama Senate with a balanced budget.
Yeah,
we can't continue to just spend $1, $2, $3, $4 extra trillion dollars every year and think that America is going to be successful and not go bankrupt.
Well,
and so that's a starter for me.
And I'm not.
We've got to come up with more realistic tax policies. The bill they just passed is going to raise taxes on businesses. It's going to raise some taxes on certain individuals. There's some tax breaks. They pick and choose who gets a tax break, and it's basically on what color state you live in.
Yeah.
And how their tax policies are, because they realize people are fleeing those high tax states to come to red states that are conservative, and they're trying to allow them to keep more of their money. So these are just things that I don't think the federal government ought to be mandating and dictating. And so we've got to take a new approach, bring some common sense back to the process in D.C.
Well, I'm not an economist, and I don't play one on TV or on the radio, and so I don't want to get too far afield here talking about economics. But, you know, you touched on money supply, and, you know, I'm baffled. I was reading the Wall Street Journal the other day about causes of inflation and, you know, what economists nowadays are suspecting might have caused. And nowhere in the article did it say anything about the enormous increase in money supply that has come as a result of this pandemic. And I just remember from economics 101 in college, you know, that the notion that increasing the supply of money would lead to inflation. And so do you agree with that? Am I the only, if I missed something, has economics changed?
No, you're absolutely right. But the thing is, they don't want the American people to recognize that. It, in essence, it's a hidden tax. You know, when they changed the tax code back in the early 1900s and created the Federal Reserve, it was because they wanted to spend more money than they were willing to tax people.
Right.
And in order to hide that, they created the Fed that could print the money on their behalf. And then it just, through the means of inflation, it devalues the dollar in your hand. They might as well have taxed it and taken it out of your hand to spend it. But now they just create it. And so that's why you don't hear Washington, D.C. talk about it in those types of terms. You don't hear the financial pundits talk about it in that regard, because it's the way our monetary system has been set up for the last 100 years. It is to allow for inflation. That's why the Federal Reserve always talks about, well, we gotta do things to make sure we don't have too much inflation, deflation. They're the ones that are creating that half the time anyway. It's a huge dichotomy that's going on in our economy, and I wish people would just kind of sit back and look at it and recognize. And what you're going to see, the Fed's going to start taking action. They're going to have to, and that means they're going to quit spending money buying bonds and stocks and everything in the equities market. And when that happens, that market's going to go down, interest rates are going to go up, and then it's just going to get worse again. And it's starting to feel like we're in the late 70s, early 80s.
It really does. And there doesn't seem to be a focus on what the real problems are. It just seems to be, like you said, an effort to continue trying to outpace inflation by spending more money, and it's just exacerbating the problem. And I know enough that I've just done some research lately and taught myself a little bit about modern monetary theory. And you know, one proponent of that is AOC. And she's in Congress, and you're exactly right. She's behind this supporter of this theory that the more money you print, the more economic, the stronger economic engine will be, and that it doesn't matter whether you have deficits, because the U.S. prints its own money and can always print just as much money as it wants to. And it ends up, I love what you said, it ends up being a tax. It ends up being a tax, and people don't realize that when they're going to the store and trying to buy that turkey that's gone up 14%, when they're going to the gas station and paying twice as much, in some cases three times as much for gas as they were just a year ago, that really what they're doing is they're financing this system that you've described, this system that's now allowing us to print money to pay for things that we never imagined 2 years ago.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're doing, is we're financing the excess government spending that is just out of control. We have to find a way to rein this in, and that's one of the ways to help curtail inflation, is to make sure that the federal government does not continue on this path of loose spending. You know, these latest two bills are huge examples. I mean, there's some good stuff in the bills, but there's also, you know, socialistic programs. I mean, the government's moving for, you know, pre-K programs for everybody, early childhood care. I mean, it's a cradle-to-grave mentality that the Democrats have. American exceptionalism is falling to the wayside. Personal responsibility is falling to the wayside. Government is going to be there to do whatever you need and pick you up. And if you look how Marxists take over countries and cultures, I mean, you know, if they can provide the health care, if then they can make sure that enough people are poor, poor people are easier to control. So if they control your health care and they control your money, then they control your lives. And that's, to me, this bill is more about power and control and instituting socialist Marxist agenda than anything to help America's economy, frankly.
Well, Paul, can you hang on with me through the break? I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about the Build Back Better plan.
Sure. Yep.
Great. Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. This is Brian Taylor standing in for Phil Williams. We'll be right back after this. Side Radio, Brian Taylor filling in for Phil Williams. We've got on the phone right now Paul Sanford. He's a candidate for Congress for Alabama's 5th Congressional District. Thanks for hanging around with us through the break, Paul.
Hey, no problem.
Wanted to talk to you just briefly. You were touching before we went to break on the Build Back Better plan. What are some of the aspects of that bill? And I know it was a boon for Democrats and they considered a victory for President Biden. But what are the worst parts of that bill in your mind?
Gosh, it gives amnesty to, I believe, 8 million illegals, provides them worker permits and legal status for up to 10 years. It creates this climate job corps program. It's got like $1.5 billion to create jobs around climate change. I believe about half of that is for the purchase of buildings, or to acquire buildings for that program. There's electric vehicle tax credits have been up to $12,500. You know, that way, you know, if you want to go buy you a new Tesla, you can get you a $12,500 right off the sticker price at the dealership, and they get to collect the $12,500. You just get the lower price.
Sounds like you're describing the Green New Deal.
Just trying to manipulate the markets to do what they want. I mean, when people talk about the Green New Deal that's in this bill, it's obviously in the bill.
Well, there's no question about it. Is there anything? And I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, there are. We've talked about some needs before. You and I. Is there anything in the bill that you think that you would support if had it been done in a more fiscally responsible way?
You know, I think there are some issues in there. I think, you know, child care is a good deal. I know that there are people out there that need some kind of help with child care. But when government starts getting into the market and manipulating the cost of child care or putting a cap on child care is when I start to have reservations about it. I know we do need to do some infrastructure and some things like that. But out of the 2,468 pages of that bill, I probably read about 250 of them.
I think you've read more than most congressmen.
Kind of scouring through it, looking for things that either I agree with or don't agree with. And it seems like there's more, to me, it seems like there's more social programs in there than anything. And that really isn't something that I can be supportive of. So I think that once you peel back the layers of the onions, there's probably some good programs in there.
Well, I appreciate you being candid about that bill. And of course, we could go on and talk about that bill as long as it is for an hour. We've got about 30 seconds. Can you tell me from your time in the state legislature, just give the audience one issue, one bill that you were particularly proud of relating to your voting record there?
Yeah, probably the one I'm most proud of is the CBD bill that helped, it was called Carly's Law, that helped the family with kids that were having these epileptic seizures. It's really shown a tremendous amount of progress in the lives of a lot of these kids, and that's probably the proudest moment that I had when I was fighting for them. They were very upset over the process, and I had to keep going upstairs to reassure them it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And at the end of the day, we were able to pass the bill. And that was probably the most rewarding day in the Senate for me.
Well, thank you for joining us, Paul. I appreciate that. Appreciate your service to the state of Alabama. Best wishes in your campaign. I know you've got a crowded field, but we will. We appreciate you being on. We will be right back after this break. You're listening to Right Side Radio, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN.